Good morning.
Sorry, Jenny said probably start at 9:40. So I was here at 9:40. I think that's just right on time. Nailed it. Crushed it. Oh, hi everybody. I gotta get my bearings. That all happened so fast. No, it's not your fault. It's my fault. How we doing? Cool, crisp morning. The grass blades were frozen this morning. Anybody see that? Yeah, I took the dog out crunching frozen blades of grass. It's pretty great. Southern California, of all places. The rest of the country doesn't know what it's like to be cold. You know what I mean? They don't get it. They just don't get it. They don't get it. Higher taxes, too. I'm moving. This is just, I hate this place. All right, so something's coming around, and you're going to want that. So, good morning. So today I want to talk about discipline in parenting. Yes, I was not asked to talk about this. I requested to talk about this. So look out. Here it comes. No. I wanted to talk about this, and I'm sure you guys have done a lot of different talks and conversations about, you know, the practicalities of parenting and all of that. And I'm not going to give any of the, like, we're not going to be in the weeds of strategies and stuff like that. But I want to provide you with a biblical foundation for discipline and kind of a theological foundation for discipline, and just hopefully set a vision. You guys are in the weeds of it right now, and set a vision for why we discipline our kids and a little bit of how we do that, but mainly the why. I'm going to keep us out of the weeds and talk about that. And you can see I'm calling this the gift of discipline, and not the burden of discipline or not the dirty work of discipline, but the gift of discipline. You all have these kiddos that there's all sorts of gifts you really want to give them, and things and hopes and dreams you have for them. And what I want to kind of hopefully encourage you with is one of the great gifts you give your children is discipline, that sets them up to thrive in the world and to thrive in their relationship with the Lord. And so that's what I want to kind of offer you today. Is this is one of the great gifts that you give your kids. And I'm right in the thick of this with you. I'm all the usual disclaimers. I'm not a perfect parent. Our kids are 14, 12, and 10, so the results remain to be seen. So you can judge not what I do, but what I say. No. But I want to think of, like, yeah, you know, if you think about it, we're trying to give our kids a healthy diet. You give your kids healthy food, you're trying to give them a healthy diet of all sorts of things, and I think of discipline as like part of a complete balanced breakfast, right? It's part of the things we give our kids to help them thrive in the world. And, I mean, any of you who have been teachers, you have probably seen on day one, there's students that within 10 minutes you see them and you're like, they have not gotten a healthy diet of discipline at home. And you see the effects of that. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry for that kid. Like that was something really important was withheld from them for whatever reason. And I see the impacts of that. And so it is a gift. And I start that way because, you know, discipline, it's hard, right? It's so hard. And you need conviction. You need conviction and courage to continue to do it well. And so I want to try to provide you with a vision for that today. And look at God as our Father, and the way that God treats us, and how God deals with us, and then to say we are to be these kind of reflections of God to our children. Imperfect, sinful, broken reflections, but we are their first taste of God, which is a terrifying reality, but it's true. So are you up for this today? Up for going on this journey? Okay, so there's so many passages that we could look at today biblically, but the one that I'm really compelled by is Hebrews 12, which has nothing to do with human parenting. It actually has to do with God and his parenting of us. And so I want to just look at that again, like how does God parent us? And then say, okay, in light of that, how do we parent and discipline our kids? Okay? So Hebrews 12, this comes right after the great, the chapter, the Hall of Faith chapter. By faith, all these men and women of the past did amazing things, and we read about all of them, and that's then what comes here. So let me read it to you. And we're going to look at how God fathers us and disciplines his children, okay? Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, those are all the great saints that have gone before us, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We're in a marathon. Life is a marathon. You all know it right now. You are in the thick of the marathon in early parenting, right? But it's a race. Let's run it well. Let's, perseverance is kind of the key word there. And then he goes on to, these are a group of first century Christians who were actually being persecuted because they were Christians. In their culture, it was not okay to be a Christian. So some of them were like being publicly shamed. Some were losing their jobs. Some had actually lost their property. Some had been thrown in prison. So they were going through a lot of really hard things for being Christians. So he's talking to a group of discouraged, tired people. But he says, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. So no one's been martyred yet, okay? But it's getting heavy. And then here's to our point. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. And then he quotes from Proverbs. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves. And he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. Or to you, I would say, God is treating you as daughters. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our human fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Okay, so we're starting. I just want you to watch God in action as a parent. And you can just follow the outline here. The means of God's discipline is pain, okay? It says, no discipline is pleasant at the time, but painful. These Christians were undergoing a lot of pain, challenges, trials that hurt. And the author says, this is what God sometimes does. He introduces painful things into our lives. He allows them. Sometimes he even brings them. He brings pain into our lives for a purpose. And I would guess many of you, if you were to kind of talk about your own journey of faith, in the times where, like the most important times in your journey of faith, the times where you really grew, I bet like for 90% of you, those times would be connected with pain in some way. Like, oh man, something happened that was really painful, and then out of that, something beautiful came. But this is what God does. He introduces pain into our lives. And what's important in this is to recognize that the source of God's discipline is not his anger or rejection, but his love and acceptance of us as children. And this is what the author is saying, like, hey, you guys are going through something hard. That doesn't mean God doesn't love you. He's like, no, he's treating you as children. He's actually like, parents discipline their kids. So in one sense, this pain is evidence that God does care for you, which is not what we feel when we're in pain, right? When things aren't going the way we want, it feels like, God, where are you? And that's a valid question to ask. But God, I feel like you don't love me. I feel like you're screwing with my life right now. I feel like I'm praying and I'm not hearing anything. I don't feel like a daughter right now. I don't feel like a child of God. And this author's like, no, if you can see this differently, sometimes pain is actually evidence that God loves you, which is totally not the way we think about life. But it's like, no, that's God disciplines people he loves. He's not going to discipline someone he doesn't care about. So this pain is coming from a place of love, not rejection or anger. Okay? And all we have to do is look at like scripture. Some of the people God loved most, used the most, had the most painful of lives, right? It's not like the people God loved the most had the easiest lives. Oftentimes it's opposite that. So if life is hard for you right now, congratulations. God must really love you. Okay, and then the goal of God's discipline is the good of sharing in his righteousness and peace. Let me read again, verse 11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. So the goal of discipline of God is not our comfort. It's not our pleasure. It's not necessarily our happiness, but it's our good. It's our growing to become more and more like Jesus. It's righteousness. That's what we call it. It's becoming the kinds of people, actually, that we really, in our heart of hearts, want to be. Men and women of virtue. And he mentions this word peace. I love the word peace. If you go through hard seasons and you experience God's love for you in those hard seasons, you come out oftentimes a more peaceful person. You're more settled. You're more grounded than you were before that trial. You grow. And, I mean, people that have weathered a lot and stuck with God, like you see them, they just kind of, they're not easily thrown. They can kind of just weather things, and there's this grounded peace about them. And so this is God's plan for us. This is how God fathers us, right? He brings pain. The source of his pain is his love and care for us so that we become more and more like him, grow in righteousness and grow in peace. Okay? You with me? Okay. So what I want to say then, that's how God is with us. So the big idea I want to just, again, we're not getting into the weeds today, but is to think together as parents, how can our parenting our kids and disciplining of our kids reflect the way that God disciplines us? Okay? So this is what parenting's all about, right? This is what disciplining our kids is. What we do in our kids' lives in various moments is we introduce pain into their lives. We introduce some painful consequence into their lives. I'm curious, those of you, not table table mentors, but that, what's the oldest kid? I'm just curious where you guys are at right now. Does anybody beat Luce? We got a 10-year-old, 11. 23, right, 23, okay, 11. How many have 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, okay, 1. Okay. All right. That's helpful. I'm trying to figure out. Discipline looks different, you know, at 11 than it does at 1. So at whatever age your kids are, maybe not at 6 months, pretty quick for us at least. But you get to about a year, and I always figure, like, when you're starting to ask, do they know what they're doing? They know what they're doing. People are like, she doesn't know. I'm like, she knows exactly what she's doing. I know my daughter. But we introduce pain into their lives, as God does. Sometimes that is proactive pain that we introduce. It could be a spanking, right? I insert pain into their life. Sometimes it is maybe the pain we introduce is we don't save them from a natural consequence. So I'm not actively inserting pain, but I could prevent a pain that I'm not preventing. Again, and there's different forms of pain. It can be physical pain. Again, a spanking, or it could be some other pain. It could be emotional pain. Are you gonna have a timeout, or you're not gonna get this thing that you're gonna get? But it has to hurt, right? I have no idea what the current like cool gurus are saying about spanking. Is spanking totally out, or is it in these days? I know it goes back and forth. I don't know. CPS. Okay, so it's out. It's definitely out. Okay, so Hot topic. Okay. So we spanked. Carrie and I spanked our kids. There's a bunch of different ways to do discipline. We kind of, for us, like the 2 to 4 age range was kind of the peak spanking times. And every kid was different. Our first one got the most. Our second was so different than the first. And that was, you know, its own thing. I know there's a lot of controversy about that. You know, it's a limited tool for a limited time, whether you use it or not. But the key is something has to hurt, whether it's physical or not. Pain is part of discipline. And I had a good friend who, they were really in a season where the kid was just really hard and they were spanking, and it kind of wasn't working. And then they just said, you know, they just pulled something away. I think it was a toy, and that worked 10 times better than the spanking did. So, right, every kid's different. The form of pain changes depending on who the parent is and the kid is. But pain is necessary, obviously. Pain is the key to discipline. Discipline hurts, right? It's painful, it says. But we always want to be disciplining in a way that shows that the source, again, with God, of our discipline is not our anger or our rejection of our kid, but our love and our delight in them. You're being disciplined because I love you, right? We don't want to discipline out of frustration, out of resentment, which it's easy to do. So we have to find ways, of course, to communicate our love even as we're disciplining our kids, right? And that's a challenging thing to do. We want to do that. I think part of being able to do that is learning to discipline early enough that you don't get to your breaking point when you're disciplining, right? Like I so often I go to Target, and I feel like every time I go to Target, it's usually a mom. There's some mom, and she usually has multiple kids, and she's berating one of her kids. And I'm like, this is a terrible mom. And the reality is, if I had like had a video of watched them for the last hour, I'd be like, this is a terrible kid, you know? And she's like saying things that in public feel too not kind, and she's not disciplining out of love, she's disciplining out of anger. And she looks like a bad mom, but I'm guessing what actually happened was the discipline should have come half an hour earlier in a place where she was still in a good spot, that it wasn't about her frustration and anger. It was actually about, hey, this is inappropriate behavior. Right, we don't want to get to the red. And I think we do. We just get warned on all of a sudden, boom, and then we're disciplining out of anger rather than out of principle and out of love for them. God never disciplines us in that kind of way. His is always intentional. It's proactive, it's thoughtful. But all that to say, love disciplines. And I think sometimes, especially young, you know, moms with young kids, you're like, I love this kid so much, I don't think I can do it. And I just want to remind, no, you love them so much, you have to do it. If you love them, this is a gift that you give your kids. Like I said, sometimes we're disciplining out of our own needs, and sometimes we don't discipline out of our own needs. You know, I want my kids to like me, especially as they get older. Like I got a 14-year-old. I want her to think I'm cool, right? I want to be cool. I want to be a fun dad, and we want our kids to like us. And so sometimes we don't discipline. Really, that's all out of our own needs. And I was talking to my wife this week. I was telling her about that I was going to do this. I said, if you had one word of advice for these young moms about discipline, what would you say? And her one word was, if you're doing it right, your kids are not going to like you sometimes. You know, and I look around, I just see in the world today, I see a lot of parents who just want to be liked by their kids. Totally understandable. And if we're doing it right, our kids should not like us sometimes. God did not make you your kid's friend. He gave you to them as their parent, and not as their grandparent, but as their parent. And it's funny. I think my wife does a great job parenting. And then we got a dog 3 years ago, a little Maltipoo, and she's a terrible parent to this dog. And I tell her, I'm like, you don't parent this dog, you grandparent this dog, you know. Like, and a lot of parents want to be grandparents, and God gave you to your kid as their parent, not their grandparent. All that to say, the source for discipline is love, and acceptance, not anger or not our own needs. And the goal then, the goal of our discipline, again, is the same as God's. It's them growing to share in God's righteousness and peace. I want to form this child into the character of Jesus. I can't, I mean, that's God's job. But discipline is a gift I give them to grow them. So discipline is for them. It's not for me. And again, I think we, I observe a lot of people, we discipline for us. Like, oftentimes we discipline for our own comfort, right? Just go to your room. Like, I'm so sick of this kid. I'm so sick of hearing them nag or whatever they're doing. I'm actually disciplining. That's about, like, I just need a break. So I'm going to just discipline them because this is about me. It's not really about helping them in this moment. Or I'll be honest, sometimes we discipline our kids, again, not for their good, but we do it for our own reputation. Like, we were in a season, my oldest, who's 14 now, when she was like 7, for whatever reason, she's pretty easy kid, but she would be the most pressing of boundaries and most disrespectful in public. And so we'd have people over, and she would, like, come at me in a way that was disrespectful, in ways she wouldn't normally do when no one was around. And I don't know why, but she felt like doing it when we were in public. And so I'm, like, I'm feeling all the relational, like, my friends are watching my daughter disrespect me in this moment, and it just not be appropriate. And so I'm having to, like, okay, am I disciplining her because I want to look good in front of my friends? I want a kid who makes me look good, or am I going to discipline for her and for her good? So all that to say, to model God's discipline, we have to figure out, when is this about me? And there's all sorts of ways that it can be about us. And then how do I make this about them? Just what is good? What's going to be good for their development and growth? And of course, we're going to make mistakes along the way, but that's what we're trying to do. So again, introducing pain out of love for them for the sake of their ultimate long-term flourishing and growth. Make sense? And it's a gift. I'll share one story. This is my classic story. My mom who's not here, my mom's sick. I swear she would have been here. I talked to her yesterday. But she came down with something this weekend, and she's still sick. I told her, don't come. She almost came. When I was like 6, I went to swim team. I hated swim team. Morning swim, for whatever reason. Kristen and I, did you like swim team? You did? I hated it. So funny. No, I didn't. I didn't. It's the one sport I didn't like. And so one day, Brendan Koch slept over. We had a sleepover, and we were supposed to, Saturday morning, we were supposed to go to swim team. We're walking through the green belt in our neighborhood, and I said, let's ditch swim team. And so we went to a park, and we played. We'll call it eight. I don't know. Back then, there's free-range parenting back then. You could kind of do what you wanted back then. And so we played at the park, and then my mom came by walking the dog, just happened to pass by. It's total like a Genesis 3 moment, and we like tried to hide in the trees. We heard the sound of the, you know, God walking in the cool of the morning, and she saw us, and she said, "What are you guys doing?" And I came up with this great explanation, and I said, "They said if any of us could swim the length of the pool underwater, we could go early." And you know, my hair is totally dry. There's just not a. So I lied to her, and Brendan's watching this happen. And I was just thinking of now as a parent, what would I have done if I were my mom? And my son, my 6 to 8-year-old son, lied to me, ditched swim team. Do I let him off the hook? Like, what do I do there? And she took me to swim team, walked me over, made me explain what I'd done to our coach, took me home. Got the wooden spoon out last time, just a little paddle, and it was the last spanking I ever got. And it's now a legendary story among my friends, a little Davey who lied to his mom, you know, ditching swim team. But I'm so glad that she did that. like that for me. I don't know if I've ever lied to her again in my life. But there was a moment she could have spared me. She could have let me experience the consequence. And she loved, I had no doubt about my mom's love for me. And I feel like she did what was right. I experienced the natural consequence. She inserted pain as well. And I learned something, that lying hurts. And lying is not a good thing. And it trained me in righteousness. So turn your paper over. And I want to kind of have, I've got two big picture ideas to kind of turn towards for the rest of our time. And what is our time, Jenny? When do you want me done by? What is that clock? No. Okay. It's 10:07. Great. Perfect. Okay. All right. So the idea is God disciplines us for our good. We want to model that. So here's two gifts I think you give your kids when you discipline the way God does. You can see the first one there. Godly discipline gives our children the gift of redemptive gut theology of God. What do I mean by that? For better or for worse, your children's gut theology of God, not like what they are told in Sunday school, what they read in the Bible, but their kind of like internal sense of who God is mostly going to be formed by you, and if you're married, your husband's. Okay, what a beautiful honor, and what a terrifying responsibility. We all know, we can look back at our relationship with our parents, but it's sobering that their first picture of who God is you and your husbands, again, if you're married. And their gut theology of God will probably come most by their own sense of who you are and your relationship with them. It might not even be the words you say, but it's going to be, again, their gut sense of who you are with them. Like, is mom kind of annoyed with me, generally? Like, I get this vibe, she's annoyed with me. Does she enjoy me? Does dad pay attention to me? Is dad proud of me? Their intuition kicks in pretty early, and they have a sense of our posture towards them, and that will get projected onto God. And so I'm always, when I'm preaching on Sundays and I'm saying things like God as Father, I'm aware that that word is very triggering to people, depending on what their own experience of their earthly father was. And so what I would say is, you are their first image of God. And so we want to parent in a way that accurately reflects to them who God actually is. And so I want to think for a minute for you all to think, who is God actually? What kind of a God is he? And I want to read from Exodus 34, okay? So take a look at your passage. This is where God shares with Moses, like, you want to know who I am? You want to see my glory? This is the essence of who I am. Here's what he says. The Lord, that's his name, Yahweh, Yahweh, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children, their children, for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Okay, there's a lot I could say about that. But what I want to say is, when God reveals his essence to Moses, he says, I am so loving and compassionate and patient and forgiving, and I care about sin, right? Those two things. And if you just start from Genesis 1 and read the whole Bible and ask yourself, who is this God? You will come away with those two qualities in God. So loving, gracious, compassionate, forgiving, and he cares about sin and evil. Genesis 1 through 2, so loving. Genesis 3, there are consequences when we sin. And if you read Jesus, and you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and ask yourself, who is this guy? What's he like? You will get the exact same answer. He's incredibly gracious, compassionate, loving, beautiful, and he cares about sin and evil and wickedness. And so as parents, we want to reflect that to our kids. I have on your outline strength and warmth. I think those are the two qualities of who our God is. He's warm and he's strong. I think all good leadership, good leaders exhibit those two qualities, strength and warmth. Good parents exhibit those two qualities, strength and warmth. And so we get to exhibit those two qualities to our kids. We get to be their first example of a loving authority. And both of those are really important. And I think like a seven-year-old, their experience of dad, I think, should be, dad is so warm. Dad loves me. Dad delights in me. Dad enjoys me. Dad, he's so proud of me. And you don't mess with dad. Like, if you disobey dad, it's going to hurt. Like, there's going to be a consequence. He's warm and he's strong. And the same with mom. She's so loving and tender and gracious. And you don't mess with mom. When you do, there's consequences. This is who our God is, and this is who we're called to be as parents. I think I maybe mentioned this to you last time I was here, but I feel like every child, by the time they're four, needs an answer to two basic questions. And the first question is, am I loved? Am I loved unconditionally? Do I know in my bones that mom and dad love me? Like, in all that I am, all my emotions, all my gifts, all my weaknesses, do I know in my bones there is room for me in all that I am? I'm not too much for my parents. They just love and adore me. Every kid needs an answer to that. And you could think back on your parents and whether you had an affirmative answer to that or not. Like, was I loved in all my stuff? Or were there certain parts of me that honestly were not welcome into my family, right? Like there are certain emotions like that just were off limits. Anger was something you could never express, or whatever the emotion was. Or was I loved in all my parts? Did they have room for me? That's the first question every kid needs answered. And the second one is, who's in charge? Who's in charge here? Am I in charge? Are my parents in charge? Is this a democracy where sometimes I'm in charge, sometimes they're in charge? Every kid desperately needs an answer to that question. And by certainly a year and a half, they're asking that question every single day. Who's in charge? And they're pushing the limits to find out who is in charge. And really, this is the same two things I think we all, as followers of Jesus and at children of God, those are the two basic questions we all need answered. Am I loved, God? Am I loved by you in all my beauty and brokenness? And who's in charge here? Are you in charge? Am I in charge? How does this work? Like, that's what we need from our Heavenly Father. That's what our kids need. And when it comes to discipline, then, I think our kids need to regularly experience us as in charge. And that, the way we do that is we provide boundaries. Like, here are the boundaries. When you cross these boundaries, it hurts in some way because you're not in charge. I'm in charge. And they're going to keep pushing. They're going to keep asking that question. But what I would want to impress on you is my conviction that kids want boundaries. They really do. They're going to push boundaries. They're going to write all the time. But in their heart of hearts, they desperately want boundaries. Boundaries help kids thrive and flourish. Boundaries make them feel safe. It helps them know the rules, what to be expected. And when there are not boundaries, and we can think of kids who have no boundaries, they don't thrive and they don't feel safe. And it's such a bummer to have to be the one to enforce boundaries. But it really, they need boundaries. My wife, again, has anybody ever heard of the movie The Outsiders? Okay, there's a book and the movie, and it's about these sort of ragtag group of people who didn't really have parents. I mean, there's kind of these rogue kids, all these famous actors, like their first movies, like Tom Cruise when he was like 12 or 15, and there's a bunch of different people. But there's a great quote from the book, and my wife loves that book, and it's again, one of these kids that grew up without parents. And he's described this way. He kept trying to make someone say no, and they never did. They never did. And that was what he wanted, for someone to tell him no. Like this kid who wanted a boundary and didn't get it. So all that to say, the first gift we give our kids is a gut theology of God. That God is warm and God is strong. And you can bring that by being warm and strong. I put on your outline 1 John 4:20. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For if anyone does not love his brother, whom he has seen, how can he love God, whom he has not seen? It's hard to love, you know, if you can't love a person that's right in front of you, how are you going to love God? And I would say the same thing for our kids. How can our kids ever learn to obey a God who they can't see if they haven't first learned how to obey a parent who they can see? So your enforcing of discipline will actually help your kids learn obedience, which then can be translated as they get older to, oh, I know how to obey a heavenly father because I've learned to obey my earthly father and mother. Okay, where am I at? I got to move on here. One last thing to say about this test case for, I put up here an example. Do your words model the weightiness and truthfulness of God's words? You're their first picture of God. Do your words carry the kind of weightiness and truthfulness that God's words carry? So here's a good question for you right now as a parent. Again, if your kids are too young, this will be a hard one. But do your words carry weight with your kids? And here's the question, a really simple question. When you ask your kids to do something, if you're honest with yourself, do you expect to be obeyed? Okay? It's bedtime. Kids, why don't you go to the bathroom? Why don't you brush your teeth? Ask yourself, again, some of you are too young, are you expecting them to obey your word? And I think it's really easy to, over time, get in a habit of, if you're honest, like, I'm not even expecting them to obey this word. That's why I want them to get to the bathroom by 7:30, so I'm going to start asking at 7, right? Because I don't actually expect the first one to do much. So I'll start at 7, and then by 7:20, you know, by the third or fourth time, I'll get them there eventually. You're not expecting them to obey you. So that's we don't want to find ourselves in that situation. My word is not carrying weight. I don't even think my word carries weight. Or, you know, come here, Johnny, come here. And then I do the warning. I'm warning you, Johnny, right? I'm going to start counting. For some reason, counting still works. Like, I don't know why the countdown. I don't know what they expect to happen with the count. But I'm not expecting this to work. My kid is not expecting this. I remember with our third child, she was like 3, and I found myself, you know, you kind of, you're going after it with the first one, and then you're worn down by the third one. And I remember I got to a season where I was like, I'm not even expecting Josie to come to me right now. That's not a good situation for anybody. My word has to have weight. One other example of our words carrying truthfulness, is my yes a yes? And my no a no, right? The scripture says, let your yes be yes, let your no be a no. Is my yes a yes and my no's a no? Let it be that. Mom, can I have candy right now? No. Your kid knows if your no's a no. And if they know your no's not a no, they'll keep asking. And they'll keep hounding, and they'll keep hounding, and then you give in and your no becomes a yes. Okay? And they know that, and you know that. Can we watch a movie tonight, Mom? No. And then the stakes get bigger. Can I have a phone? No. Come on, all my friends have a phone. No. Whatever the thing is, kids know if mom and dad's yes is a yes and their no is a no. And God's word, the way God speaks, his word is always truthful, and his yes is a yes and his no is a no. If you go to the temptation account in Genesis 3, right, God says to Adam, don't eat from this tree. No touch, right? If you eat this, you'll die. The day you eat it, you'll die. That's his word to Adam. And then the snake comes, and his temptation is essentially God's bluffing. He questions the authority of God's. You're not going to die. He's bluffing. His yes is not a yes. His no is not a no. He's not going to do what he says he's going to do. And Adam and Eve, in one sense, don't die physically, but theologically, we would all say, but they died that day. Spiritually, they died. God wasn't bluffing. God doesn't bluff. God's yes is a yes and his no is a no. And so one of the ways that we model this is by, we want our words to carry weight. And the only way for them to carry weight is there has to be consequence when they disobey mom or dad's words. And that doesn't mean we can't change our mind from time, right? Like, hey, I said no, I can never, no, we can, that, it doesn't mean we can't change our mind, but it means that they need to feel the weightiness of our words. Okay, let me make one more point, and then I'll stop, and we can have questions if you want. The last thing I want to say is, this is the second point, godly discipline helps, this is so good, helps our children in their fight with sin and in the path towards righteousness. Remember, after Genesis 3 that I just mentioned, then you have Cain and Abel, and they both offer a sacrifice to God, and God, we're not told why, accepts Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. And any of you with two kids know how that doesn't feel fair and how much kids have a heart for justice in this world when they're treated unjustly. And that's how Cain felt. And Cain is upset, he's angry, and he's stewing in a sense of jealousy towards his brother. And God comes alongside Cain in like a parent in a beautiful way. And it says, then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what's right, you'll be accepted. But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. Really interesting image. Sin is like a lion just crouching. It wants to take over your heart, Cain. It wants you to fill you with jealousy. And you don't let it do that. You've got to master it. And if you know the story, he doesn't follow God's advice and he kills his brother, right? This is the reality of our kids. Sin is crouching at their door, and it desires to master them. And we need to help them so that sin does not master their hearts. I have in here the human heart, blank slates versus beautiful and broken. I think secular culture for years, I think, kind of presents the human heart, like kids are born with kind of a blank slate, or the tabula rasa idea. And then unfortunately culture and people kind of corrupt them over time. But they're kind of born innocent or blank, sort of neutral and then corrupted. And anyone who's had a child would say, no, that's not true. There's something inherently in there that is kind of fundamentally wired towards disobedience. They are beautiful. They're made in God's image, beautiful, tender, wonderful, and broken. That's the biblical assessment of the human heart. It's not a blank slate. It is beautiful, but broken. But sin is ready to do something. And so what we're trying to help them in discipline is help them in that fight with sin. I have here the message, follow your heart versus guard your heart. Right? The secular cultural message is follow your heart. That's the worst advice I've ever heard someone give. If I followed my heart, I would end up in really bad places. The biblical admonition is guard your heart. Your heart is a complex place of all sorts of desires, and we need to learn to guard our hearts, protect our hearts, discipline our hearts, cultivate our hearts so that they move towards righteousness. And children are not equipped to guard their own hearts, right? A 2-year-old is not equipped to guard his heart or her heart. A 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, their prefrontal cortex is not there yet. And so what discipline is, it's a way that we can, from the outside, it's like the training wheels. Before they're ready to ride the bike on their own, discipline, pain from the outside, helps put some guardrails around their hearts so they begin to learn that sin hurts. Sin hurts. And righteousness is good. And so we get to put those guardrails to help them flourish. Okay, I think I need to stop. I have more, but it's late. So I'm going to stop there and say, give your kids this hard but beautiful gift for their own sake. Amen.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, great question. I think the younger they are, when you have a child who's so young, they're easily distractible, maybe you shouldn't expect immediate obedience. What's the transition from not expecting that initially to over time, you know, as they grow? I do think the younger they are, the more the consequence needs to be immediate and somewhat unexplained, right? You can't go into a philosophical conversation about the benefits of virtue with your two-year-old. I actually think the younger they are, the more the consequence, it can be mild, right? But it has to be immediate because they won't make a connection even 2 minutes down the road. Like, they're so easily distractible. So I would encourage you to make immediate, you know, you might have to make an immediate one and then 30 seconds later make another immediate one. And I'm not talking about taking them out and, you know, whacking them hard on the tush or something like that all the time. But I actually do think, again, you have to discern your own child, like I said earlier, like she knows what she's doing, you know, versus she has no idea what she's doing. She's just, you know, and only you can discern that. So I'm more of an advocate for when they're really little, something that's immediate, and they associate it. They have to be able to associate it with the behavior right away. And then over time, the conversation actually becomes more nuanced and richer and deeper, and you get to explain discipline. You can't explain discipline at this point. You're trying to make a connection between obedience and pain. And all that within a very loving, I know some people, you hear this, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna, you know, hurt my child. And I've never seen loving parents who discipline well, even physically discipline. I get that everyone's in a different place with that. I don't feel strongly, but I've never seen that have long-term trauma or hurt for a kid when it's done well and lovingly. It can obviously, if it's not done in those ways, it can have all sorts of bad consequences. But I just want, I mean, it's honestly, this is a horrible analogy, but you watch dogs who are trained well by their owners, it's a beautiful thing to watch. And these dogs love their owners. You know, I mean, it's like, they're not traumatized by their owners. They love their owners, and they do what they ask them to do. Now, parenting is completely different, but so don't put that one on the podcast. Yeah. 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 What did I do with my daughter who disrespected me in public? How do you deal with the differences of your kids? So with her, I really had to check myself. I mean, a lot of it was more of the work that I had to do for myself. Like, you know, it's you're a parent, and then you're also a pastor who's a parent. That sucks. Like, that's just, that makes it even worse, you know? So, and I never want my kid, you know, Carrie and I are very mindful of the whole PK thing. So I don't ever want my kids to experience me as pastor. Like, I want, that's just dad, right? And I don't know what their experience of church is. But so most of the work there was honestly the work I had to do in myself and kind of my own ego that was, you know. But then I did, you know, I talked to her. I mean, it's really hard to discipline your kids in public, right? So it was pulling her aside later and say, hey, this is not appropriate ways to talk to me. You know, all those things. She was old enough to have a conversation about that. So, but more of the work was I needed to be disciplined by the Lord in that. So I think every kid is so different. Like I said, we spanked our first daughter many times. Our second daughter maybe got two her whole life. And they responded so differently to that. One, it was like shame, and one was like, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, you know. So, and I think it's really, you guys are, God gave you to your kids. You know your kids better than anybody else does. You all know this, I know this, but there's no one size fits all. I think it's discerning willful disobedience versus even what you said, Esther, like versus distraction versus head in the clouds. It's willful disobedience that we're working. We got to have so much room for our kids, right? And sometimes we discipline, honestly, because I just want a clean house. Like, they're not being disobedient. They're just being kids, right? So it's really the discerning of this is willful. They know what they're doing, and it's willful, and it's disobedient. If they're kind of just crazy kids, right? So I know I'm not answering the question, but I think that really discerning, I don't ever want to discipline mistakes, right? I don't want to discipline a personality because they're wild. I want to discipline willful disobedience. It's the only thing. I want to have all sorts of room for the diversity of my kids and their personalities, and I don't ever want them to feel like they're just too much for me, because that's kind of who they are, you know? So that's what I would say. Tara. Yes. Yeah. If I can sing my mom's praises for a second. You want to major on the majors, right? Like, my parents had all sorts of room for all sorts of things. Like, I mean, these days, so many parents are so hyper focused on so many, like, all these little things. And it's like, no, kids need freedom and all of that. So obviously, I'm speaking to one side of parenting right now. I'd say a bunch of other things about a bunch of them, but like, pick those things, you know. And again, it's like integrity. You're right, like, telling the truth, learning to apologize. I mean, you find those major things, like, this is character formation. Go after those things. And give your kids a lot of freedom around things that don't make a moral issue out of something that's just your preference, you know? So, yeah, that's good. Yes? Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I love that. Yeah, no, I agree. You know, some of us look at like our parents' generation, we feel like, man, I don't feel like feelings were ever acknowledged for some families. And I think now we've kind of swung, my view is we've swung the pendulum way on the other side, and kids know too much about how to experience their emotions. They're too much in their own heads. Empathy, it's really interesting. There's some interesting studies right now. You would think empathy is learned by modeling empathy to your kids, right? So your kid is hurt, and as mom, you come to, oh, honey, you know, and of course, that's a beautiful thing to do. And as I model empathy, over time, they will learn empathy by seeing it. That actually isn't true. What they're learning by that is when I'm hurt, mom loves me. Mom cares for me. Beautiful. But what they're discovering is empathy is more actually learned in what would be traditionally called like the rough and tumble of, I don't want to over stereotype it, but like dad playing with his kids in the backyard. So I do that all the time. And when you're playing sports, you're tumbling, you're learning, we're having to negotiate, you know, my kid wants, my sister wants to be spun, but I want to be spun. So dad's like, no, I'm going to spin Cora. Okay, now it's your turn. And the kids in the rough and tumble of that are learning, oh, I'm not the center here. We're having to negotiate. It's like a team sport. We're having to negotiate my time and their time, and that's actually how empathy is grown in people, not by going inside, but by looking out and seeing, hey, they get their time, I get my time. So yeah, great. I totally agree. I think we have swung too far. You know, what we want is resilient kids. And I think emotions, I would say one other thing, every kid needs to learn to express emotion. That's such a valid, again, being able to express emotion is such a beautiful thing. And every kid needs to learn how to contain emotion. And we all have seen kids who either cannot, they're shut down, or they just can't contain their emotions. And we need to learn, every human being needs to learn how to do both of those things. And that's really hard, and kids are not equipped to do it on their own. So parents come along, help them unearth what's there, and help them then put containment around emotion. It's the worst. It's so hard, of course. You and everybody else. Yep.
I'm not against it. I'm also not for it. I'm kind of just like, I don't know how I feel about it.
So yeah.
You can speak to that specifically, or just what you say of like how to navigate this, because I think obviously we both, you know, we care about our kiddo and we want the best for her, and it's just hard, like in the heightened moment and then even in the non heightened moment, to just figure out what's the best.
Yeah, what do you do when you're on a different page from your spouse in terms of discipline strategies? And I imagine so many of you are in that same boat, you know, and you're always going to find yourself at different times. I don't have a great answer. I would say in general, like, you need time to really, when you're not in a code red moment, to really discuss that together and reflect on it together and hear each other out. Maybe you've already done that, but I think that's really important. Hey, here's a strategy. What's the underlying vision, and what's the goal? Because we may be on different pages with this strategy, but are we on the same idea of the goal? I think it's not a bad idea to find couples, honestly, who have kids that you really like, and ask them, "What'd you guys do?" You know, find families. You would know so many families, right, with kids. Now maybe adult kids, maybe they're in their teens or 20s, and obviously kids go through different seasons, but. But if you find a family that you're like, gosh, those kids are good kids, I would ask them, what'd you do? How did you discipline? How'd you approach discipline? And maybe you'll find a consistent theme, or maybe it'll be all over the map. You know, I actually don't know what the answer would be. It's so hard. That's one of the discussion questions, kind of connects with that. I'm trying to think. I mean, some of these mentor moms might have a better thought. What if one parent does one thing and the other doesn't? Or do we need to have do these kids need to see mom and dad? Let's say spank. You know, is it okay for dad to spank and mom to not spank? I know many families. That's how they did it. Right, dad's the spanker. Wait till your father gets home. You know, I don't feel like I have a strong. So sorry, but it's so common. But I would get to the underlying, you know, I really do think pain is the component. And so if you guys can identify forms of pain that you agree on, that would be the win, obviously. But I'd find families who you like their kids. Say, what'd you do? And again, sometimes kids are just good kids, and some, you know, you can do everything right and have a horrible kid, but and vice versa. Truly, you can get really lucky and you can get really unlucky. So I'm under no illusion that I'm responsible for my kids, for good or for ill, right now.
Yeah. I don't know if I should ask this, but I'm going to go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah. An option, a tool.
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if all I had was scripture, I would kind of be like, yeah, I think you're supposed to do it. I mean, like, if I just read the scriptures kind of straightforwardly, I'm like, yeah. That being said, I don't think I've seen lots of parents parent very well without it. And again, I think I'm not saying definitively that for sure. I think what's very clear is we are responsible for the disciplining of our kids. And you cannot discipline without pain. But the pain doesn't have to be physical, right? But there's other forms of pain that can be equally traumatizing. And again, I'm not sure, like if you are, adopting a child or fostering a child, a child's coming to your family at 3 or 4, that's a very different context where you would need to attend to the specific needs of that kid and might say, for all sorts of reasons, we're going to take that off the table. And I completely agree with that. And again, I don't know what the percentage of spankers, non-spankers in here is, but let's take a poll right now. Let's share that, and then your most recent moral failure. Let's share. So I think pain is essential. The form the pain takes, I actually think in that sense it's a tool. And it's a very limited tool, right? It's a limited tool for a limited time, and it can go wrong. I mean, people do it wrong all the time. But I do think there is I would present it as a credible option that can be done in a very loving way. But it doesn't have to be. There's other ways to do it. So, yeah. Kelsey Gonzalez. Hi, Kelsey. Interesting. Yeah.
You are the authority figure. You have to make 5,000 decisions a day, answer 5,000 questions. Yep. And I'm just like, I don't even care because this is not stuff I would care about.
Yeah.
But with that whole yes, be yes, this isn't a democracy, things like that, like, what did you and your wife find that in decision fatigue, but wanting to let your yes be yes, your no be no, consistency, first time obedience, how did you juggle that without being a tyrant?
Yeah, it's a great question. If you are married and parenting together, one strength is sometimes you send in the reinforcements, right? Sometimes you're at your wit's end, and Brandon's got some energy. Sometimes vice versa. So there is a nice tag, but we haven't like. Our yes has not always been a yes. I mean, I feel it even now. Sometimes like, okay, kids, time to go to bed. I mean, that's very real right now. Like, oh, Josie's not going to bed. What's going on? Like, so you're wanting to provide a combination of freedom and boundaries. That's right. That's every good parent. You want you want freedom and you want boundaries. And navigating that is so hard and decision fatigue and have you all seen Yes Day, the movie? You know, it's like, right? She's sick. Like, I was never going to be that mom. I'm saying no constantly. And we're going to say no a lot. I think we just acknowledge, I'm going to be the bad guy. I hate being bad. I used to be a free spirit, you know, and now I'm this Nazi mom. And you're not being a Nazi mom. You're just trying to, be who you are. So I think if there's one thing I would want to impress on you guys, it'd be, I'm going to be the bad guy a lot. And that sucks. And that's parenting. That is only one aspect of parenting, but that is parenting. Because there's nobody else that's got to be me. And I will say, I think our work early on, the hard work early on pays dividends a lot later in life. And so I would say you're in this pocket of time that feels endless, but it's not. It'll end soon. And the work you do now, it will bear fruit in your relationship with your kids and in their lives later. And so I think it's just such a strategic time. Yeah.
I was actually going to say something. Kind of
yeah. Totally.
Thank you so much. Can I pray for you?
Yeah. Okay.